morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We have Terry Goddard with us today on the telephone for an interview. He's running for Secretary of State of Arizona. He's a former Attorney General of Arizona. He was reelected and elected Mayor of Phoenix on four separate occasions. He's an Arizona native, about as native as you can get. And he was elected Attorney General in 2002 and 2006. He won national attention for protecting consumers and fighting international organized crime. In 2010, he received the Kelly Wyman Award as the highest recognition given by fellow attorney generals because of his excellent work on fighting border crime and consumer fraud. I know that when I was on juries, the hardest thing to do would be deal with white collar crime, because it's complicated when it's not, if you're actually sitting in a jury. And his willingness to prosecute white collar crime and is, I think, pretty amazing. He started out by prosecuting and suing really a company that made protection for police, a vest, and that were defective. That's a nice thing to do. Self-defective defective vest to our police. Terry, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. Good morning.
Well, it's great to have you with us today. You're practicing now a law now as a private in a private company, right?
Yes.
And you were in 2002. You were a Wasserman Fellow at Harvard Law School in recognition of your public service. Tell us a little bit about the campaign that's coming up. You're running against Michelle Reagan, right?
That's correct, state senator. And you touched on some interesting parts of my background, including the amazing case that we had against the vest manufacturer, which was one of the most unscrupulous things I've ever heard of, where they knew that these vests deteriorated in heat. And
they sold them to Arizona police.
With their vest when they're not pursuing a call, they usually keep it in their trunk. And maybe in Sedona it's a little cooler, but boy, down here in Phoenix, those trunks get incandescent. They're so hot. And so the ability to stop a bullet was significantly degraded. And we felt, obviously, that that was a terrible thing to put our law enforcement officers in the way of. Thank you for the question about the campaign. I've been going all over the state of Arizona. I practice law, but every moment I can get, I've been on the trail. And basically talking about two things. The first is how do we get more Arizonans engaged? We have had a deplorable record of more and more people just dropping out of the election system for a whole lot of reasons, but mostly because they don't think their vote counts. They don't think that it's something that really pays attention to them or gives them the respect that they're entitled to as American citizens. And I think that's got to be reversed. And I believe I've got some ways to do it. And the second part is what's called dark money, the anonymous cash that is flooding into the state of Arizona as much or more than any other state in the country. And we have laws that don't require the original contributor in a political campaign using some of these dark money vehicles to be disclosed so that nobody knows who it is that's paying for the ads, either for or against a particular candidate. And since the Secretary of State is the chief elections officer and keeps the rolls on all political contributions, I believe that's the place you have to start in fighting back against dark money.
What can the Secretary of State do? Because Gary and I went down and for an open secrets conference by the people who do the investigative reporting on a lot of these things. And it's extraordinarily complicated to find out who's what and to trace this money from place to place. Some of the reporters, for example, in the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal that were there spent 2 years researching and trying to figure out where the money for the, I guess, the Abramovsky scandal, where the money came from and how it was spent.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not easy, but I guess it starts in a couple of places, notably the Secretary of State's office. So, you know, I'm a criminal prosecutor, as you mentioned at the beginning. I've investigated and prosecuted money laundering by the drug cartels for the 8 years that I was Arizona's Attorney General. And frankly, they are the most effective dark money operatives on the planet. They know more about how to hide the source of cash than anybody else. And we were able to find them. We were able to bring them to justice and to seize millions of dollars of their assets. So I guess you could say I've got some background in going after dark money of various kinds. Now, without statutes to support us, and Arizona doesn't have them today, obviously that pursuit is much more difficult. But I have a couple of suggestions we could go right away. One, I'd hire some forensic accountants at the Secretary of State's office who would be able to take down some of the cases, not all of them. I know some are, as you mentioned, very devious, but I think we could find some. And the second thing I would do is I would require a disclaimer. Right now, the simplest disclaimer on the market is by the dark money folks. You know, by disclaimer, I mean at the bottom of the ad, it says paid for by. If it's a candidate, it says paid for by Joe Jones for Congress, or whoever it is. If it's an IE, an independent expenditure, it'll say, from an independent expenditure called such and such, and our top three or four, turning on the situation, contributors are, and it lists the top contributors. For dark money, when there's no, these are mostly foundations, they're 501c4s, they're not required by federal law to have their contributors disclosed. So it simply says paid for, and it gives a name, Americans for Good Things, or some very innocuous sounding name. And it doesn't say anything else. And I think if they don't disclose their contributors, at the very least, there should be a disclaimer that says paid for by, and give the name, a organization that refuses to disclose its contributors. And I think voters seeing that would draw some conclusions that hopefully would not be very positive for the people that were being supported by this group. The second thing is we have to go after really tough legislation. And if the legislature fails to pass it, and they've been a miserable failure so far, then I would take the language that I proposed to the legislature, and I would take it to the citizens of Arizona in an initiative.
There's a great example of a dark money campaign running, I think it just started yesterday, for Doug Ducey. It looks like, for all the world, like a very nice commercial for Doug Ducey for governor. And at the end of it, it says, not paid for by a political action group, not part of any political campaign or for any political candidate. And then it lists AmericanEncore.org, which I looked up. And like you said, there's no mention of who's the contributors. It looks like it's clearly, dictated by the Ducey campaign. But when you get on their website, all you find are a blog that is by our old friend Sean Noble.
Mm. Sean Noble, of course, is the mastermind of dark money. He's the one who moved over $30 million in anonymous cash in the 2012 election cycle through his post office box in Arizona, and then had it distributed around the country to various campaigns. He got fined $1 million by the California Clean Elections Group for violating their statutes, the largest fine of its kind in history. But he's still in business.
One of the reporters for the television station down in Phoenix told us they couldn't find him to get a picture of him. They needed a picture of the guy at least walking in and out of his house or something. And they had a hell of a time trying to find the guy. So you'd need legislation to really close off this dark money. And the Arizona Republic has a headline today. I think it's really underestimating the amount spent, but it says $9.7 million was spent by outside groups, which includes some dark money and some non-dark money, right?
In the primary?
Yeah. Just in the primary.
That may be underestimating, but it was an appalling amount. The the amount that came into our primary elections was unprecedented, not even close in any prior election. This is a reasonably recent phenomenon, as you know. It started with the opening the floodgates for corporate contributions with the Citizens United case in 2010. And in 2012, we had a huge increase in this anonymous corporate cash flooding into campaigns called dark money, which people were just amazed at. They'd never seen anything like it. That's where the Sean Noble $120, $130 million came from. Much of it was the Koch brothers, but they're by no means the only ones that were using these anonymous sources, anonymous agents out there. And then in this cycle, it's many times bigger than it was in 2012. It's just become the absolute coin of the realm in terms of political contributions. And I know citizens I talk to around the state hate it. They feel that it deprives them of the power of their vote because they don't know who they're siding with or against. If you see the ad like the one you just described, that could be by some group that you either approve of or maybe disapprove of, and you don't know because all you see is this very simple, innocuous-sounding name. I mean, Sean Noble's major group in 2012 was something called the Committee to Protect Patients' Rights. Doesn't sound like there's anything wrong with that, does it?
None of their groups sound bad, Americans for Prosperity and so forth. So they all sound really wonderful, and I would support them all if they weren't actually dark money groups.
Think for a minute. Would they really use a name that was called a sinister group to destroy our democracy? Probably not.
One of the most sinister things I think about with the dark money and with all political corruption with campaigns is that by the time you, and I think you could probably agree with this, that by the time you actually get a judgment and find out what was done, who did it, and get a judgment against them, the campaign committee has disappeared, and it's very hard to hold these people accountable, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and that's where we need both effective laws, which we don't have in Arizona. I guess I should, as a former prosecutor, I have to hurry and say that the actions that we're describing right now, although I believe deplorable and destructive of our democracy, are not illegal in Arizona. We have literally become the Cayman Islands for dark money agents smuggling money in and out of various other states. Then that's wrong, and that's a reputation that I hope to be able to expunge.
When you were attorney general, you were willing to take on really complex cases like against the polygamist up on the Arizona-Utah border who seemed to be trading young girls like people trade baseball cards or among each other, and you were able to get a successful prosecution.
Yeah,
extraordinarily complex case. I think that's wonderful that you were willing to take it on.
Speed is of the essence, whether you're trying to save a young woman who's being essentially held prisoner, or in the case of a dark money issue where finding the source before the election is really the only way you can be effective. Now, there are rules in effect. Other states have hunkered down and taken on this scourge. California, for example, in the case of Sean Noble, in the case of his efforts to move, I think it was $15 million into California elections in 2012, they first saw the evidence of these expenditures 3 weeks before the general election. They immediately went to court efforts. Obviously, they asked for the source of the money. They were refused by Sean Noble's group. They then went to court. They got orders within a week to produce the information. They refused again and faced contempt of court. And they finally were able to determine at least some of the contributors, determined that they were illegal sources for California contributions, and were able to publicize, and this may be as important as criminal action. Basically, they went to, the media got hold of their investigations, and they were able to publicize what a nefarious operation this was, and it turned the election against the dark money people. So just the exposure, the bright light of publicity, very often is all you need to turn these situations around and to make their huge amounts of expenditure ineffective. And I think that's the most powerful weapon we have.
We were shocked, I think, as Democrats and also independents, at the amount of dark money spent in the Republican primary and the nastiness of the campaigns.
Yep.
Extraordinary amounts of money, money that at a level we've never seen before.
No, we haven't. And this is an equal, I like you, thank you for bringing that up, because this is an equal opportunity destroyer. There is no Democratic or Republican response to dark money. I find there were Republicans, especially in the Corporation Commission, who were smeared by dark money. Vernon Parker's career was effectively destroyed. I hate to say that, but they basically made him look like a common criminal in his run for the Corporation Commission. You could say they were successful because the people they supported were the nominees, but you know, we all suffer. We all take a hit when somebody from secret goes out and tries to assassinate a political candidate, assassinate in the sense of destroying their reputation. And we have no idea. We still have no idea who it was that was behind the money that did that work. But we know Republicans were the victims just as Democrats have been. And so I think we need to stand together, and I hope that will be the case in Arizona, to go after this nefarious abuse of our political contribution system. It's time to take a stand here.
The pattern seems to be that in these kinds of attack campaigns is that political action groups and dark money do all of the nasty attack ads that we see.
Yeah.
And the campaigns themselves can kind of, you know, wash their hands of it and just run positive ads for themselves. It's when people talk about how much they hate the negative campaign ads, it really does come down to the dark money and political action groups, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I personally believe that every ad should have a candidate attached to it. I think, for better or for well, if I as a candidate want to control my campaign, I want to have anything that's said about me a positive or about my opponent that's comparative, I'd like to have my name on it. I think that's a way to get some of the sheer nastiness out of our elections, and I think people are turned off by this. The Republic, about a week ago, did a very interesting comparison where they showed all of the outside expenditures, that's dark money, and what we call independent expenditures, where the contributor is disclosed, that came into the primary election, and they showed how much of the money was spent on negatives and how much was spent on positives for a candidate. And you're absolutely right. The overwhelming amount were for negatives, and that allows the candidate to keep their fingers off the knife in a way, because you don't see paid for by Doug Ducey, you know, attacking Christine Jones. It's some other entity. So it looks like the candidate that benefits is not part of the equation. Well, legally, they're not supposed to be. The law requires that there be no coordination between the outside group and the candidate. But when they have common consultants, when they have common lawyers, when they have the same contributors, you have to scratch your head and say, you know, I'm not sure that this wasn't a coordinated effort.
In this situation, you're running a clean elections campaign.
I am. I'm a clean elections candidate, and I believe in that system, although it's been watered down significantly. At least then you know that the candidates under the clean elections banner have no obligation to any major contributor.
Tell us a little bit about your opponent in the campaign. Are you expecting dark money to come into the Secretary of State campaign? Most everybody in Arizona knows that there's no lieutenant governor here in Arizona, and that the person who becomes governor, if the governor leaves, as we happened with Jan Brewer and Janet Napolitano, is the Secretary of State.
Yeah. I haven't seen dark money yet. I'm fully expecting to see it. My own campaign has focused on eliminating dark money in Arizona, and the dark money forces, I'm very sure, will strike back. So I'm just watching carefully and prepared for the worst. But I hope not. I mean, I think it's a deplorable situation. It came up in a recent interview with the Arizona Republic's editorial board, where somebody asked both candidates, what would you do if dark money appeared on your side. And my opponent, State Senator Reagan, just laughed and said, "Oh, I would say thank you very much, but I prefer that you give the money to me as a contribution." And I thought that was a very, very bad response, because whether it's for you or against you, dark money is evil. Dark money is basically destroying voters' confidence that the system works, and putting all kinds of anonymous accusations out there. And I think we all know from radio, especially from the various chat rooms on the website, that when people aren't accountable, when you don't know who they are, they'll say and do anything. They'll say the most outrageous things because they know you can't find out who said it. And so just to say, dark money's okay if it's on my side, is deplorable, in my opinion. I think you have to speak out, and as Secretary of State, whether it's for me or against me, I think it needs to end. And it needs to end as quickly as we possibly can do it in Arizona. And even without statutes, if I'm elected in November, I intend to do two things. One is to immediately use my prosecutorial and investigative skills and hire people who have them as well to go after the sources of these contributions. And failing to find those, I will fight for a disclaimer that basically declares to the entire world that this is a group who refuses to disclose its contributors. I think that's something voters need to know.
There was a headline that Michelle Reagan supported payday loans when she was in the state legislature.
Yeah.
Is that true? She's a payday loan supporter, or she voted for
them? Yeah, she was. Back when payday loans, Arizona tried payday loans on a 10-year trial basis. And when the 10 years was almost up, the payday loan industry came to the legislature and said, "We'd like to have that sunset removed so that we can continue to do business." As Attorney General, I saw the kind of damage that was done by these companies. The interest rates of 500, 600, 700% on small loans that were rolled over, and people were caught in a trap of debt and incredibly high interest. And though there's no joke about it, it was very serious. It was very damaging to an awful lot of our fellow citizens. And what she said was that people enjoyed them, that was a quote, and that she saw no reason that they should be terminated in Arizona. Now, fortunately, the voters of our state thought otherwise, and when the payday lenders tried to appeal to the citizens for a new lease on life, that went down in flames. So I think she was wrong to support them, but that was her position.
But even conservatives opposed payday lending, and many Republicans, didn't they? And she still supported it.
No, they did, and that's the it's about economic fairness. I think these are folks that overreach. They take consumers that are in a desperate situation. They get them caught up in a cycle of debt that is almost unmovable and unrich to you can't get out of it, and that's the reason that I think people from both parties were adamant that this had to end in Arizona, and it has ended in Arizona. And we at the Attorney General's office went after any efforts to sort of reform payday lenders under a different title, and for a while we were successful. I think that unfortunately there are now some of the same operators are back claiming they're not payday, they're something else. But I think the small loan at exorbitant interest rates, unfortunately, continues in our state. And on the Internet, there's still ways that you can find them.
They're now auto title loan companies. But I noticed over the weekend that, speaking of Reagan's quote, that it was fact-checked by the Arizona Republic and found to be true. So
did she actually said that? Yeah,
yes.
I no question. I mean, I've seen the sites on that. But perhaps the more devastating vote and position that she took was in this last year. You're all familiar, I'm sure, with Senate Bill 1062. That was the Right to Discriminate bill. That was the bill that went through the legislature very quickly, that basically allowed businesses to refuse service to our fellow citizens if they didn't like them. And that was signed, they're going to be signed by the governor, and the business groups across Arizona basically appealed to her and said, "This is terrible for our state. A, it makes us look like we're bigots and highly prejudiced. B, it's going to kill lots of ongoing positive things that are happening in Arizona today. The biggest, of course, the flagship is the Super Bowl, and next year in February we'll have the Super Bowl here, but we have a whole series of other sporting events leading up to it, who are not going to come to a state that is discriminating against a large group of our citizens. And the bottom line was that the governor did the right thing after 6 days of pondering and vetoed it. But Senator Michelle Reagan was adamant that that was her vote. She voted in favor of it. When she was asked to change her mind, she refused. When she was asked by a group of fellow Republicans, including Steve Pierce, to go to the governor and ask her for a veto, she refused to do that, too. So this was her position. And when you have somebody who's going to be, and I think this is very important in this race, going to be the chief elections officer of the state, going to be the person who is the last authority on fair elections, on making sure that everybody, regardless of their party, regardless of their background, regardless of their feelings, whether they're gay or straight or whether Republican or Democrat, they get treated exactly the same. And her position, unfortunately, said, no, there's some people in our society I'm not going to treat the same.
What can you do? You mentioned earlier on about getting people to vote, you know, especially in these off presidential year elections. I saw a statement by Clinton, Bill Clinton, yesterday that too many people don't even know that they're the consequences of the off presidential year elections, and that's why people don't turn out. What can we do to get people more involved in the state of Arizona?
Well, people have to be convinced, and a lot are very, very skeptical right now, that their vote counts, that it's worth doing, that it is, that they are part of an important process, a decision-making process. I'm afraid what we've been talking about for most of this conversation has been dark money. People know about dark money. It's surprising how many people, you would think that was a relatively obscure political concern, but it's not. People know that they don't know who it is that's sponsoring many of these ads. And if you don't know who's sponsoring them, how do you know how you should react, or whether it's a group you oppose or you support? I think that's one of the things that's made people feel powerless. Another is the partisanship. Frankly, Secretaries of State and the current incumbent, a guy I like very much, but who I think has done a very bad thing in the office by being very partisan. He's gone out and was the state chairman for presidential candidate on the Republican side. He was he pursued the president's birth certificate all the way to Hawaii, and it's what I would have to characterize as a political stunt. So if people aren't of that particular party, they are going to feel the Secretary of State is against them, that person who has to be absolutely impartial is in fact a partisan and is going to call. We're going to make close calls in the favor of his or her particular party. That's wrong, and that makes people feel uninvolved or that their involvement doesn't make any difference. So, you know, it unfortunately, Arizona right now is 45th in the nation in our voter turnout, and we're falling like a rock. In this last primary election, the one that's just passed on the 26th of August, everybody expected it'd be a big turnout because, at least on the Republican side, there was $16 million spent by the candidates. There was a tremendous amount of what I would call sound and fury of advertising blasts. And yet the total number of voters went down from 2012. And you have to scratch your head and say, well, I would at least think that if there was a vigorous debate and there were some very capable candidates and lots of money being spent on the media, that more people would be involved, that they would hear about it and they'd want to participate. That was not the case. So what we have is far more systematic and far more deep-seated than just you've got to have vigorous candidates, you've got to have better quality people. I don't think anybody would say that the offerings in the Republican primary for governor weren't you know, whether you agree with them or not, they were quality people. They were putting out very, very important information, and they had the money to back it up. So obviously that's not going to fix it. I think this next Secretary of State has got to change the game, has got to be involved in exhorting, getting voters to the polls who are skeptical now and who are not participating. And that means young people. Most of them in college and community college are not participating, are not registered. I'm going out tomorrow, which is National Voter Registration Day, at the community colleges throughout Maricopa County, at least. I don't think I can get farther than that, to help register new voters. I think that's got to be critically done. I think we need high school students to know what they're getting into, to be prepared to be voters, and to know how important that responsibility is. I think we're missing the boat there. So the next Secretary of State has got to be far more aggressive, or we become spectators in our own government. We become non-participants as non-voters, and I think that's a recipe for destruction of our democracy.
That's one of the most difficult things to deal with, people who say it's just Tweedledum, Tweedledee, my vote doesn't matter, or they're completely turned off to politics. You can't even discuss it with them. And some of them are conservative, and some of them are liberal, but they, in terms of their orientation, but they just don't vote. They just don't get involved. Why do we make it so difficult in the United States for people to vote compared to other Western democracies? And there's a campaign, I must say, led almost entirely by the Republicans to make it even more difficult to
vote.
Yes,
and my opponent in this election was the person that led that campaign in Arizona. I think it, you know, I should not be a partisan issue. I think making sure that there's one essential question that has to be asked. If you're a United States citizen, you have a right to vote. And I think any unnecessary impediments that interfere with exercising that right are wrong. I mean, they should not be there. If you're not a citizen, you have no right to vote. You should never be in the polling place, and you should never cast a ballot. So we got to make that bright line distinction, and it's clear in law, and it needs to be continuously enforced. But as to a legitimate United States citizen, they should not be run through extra hoops like right now they are. The Secretary of State has imposed a dual ballot system on the state of Arizona at amazing cost. I hope anybody that's a fiscal conservative will take a hard look at that system, because we paid millions of dollars across the state, you and I as taxpayers, for a second ballot for people who had used the federal registration form instead of the state form. And they were called federal voters, and they only got to vote for certain offices, namely Congress. We spent millions of dollars. Do you know how many people across Arizona voted a federal ballot?
21
people. The cost per vote is absolutely astronomical. And for what? Did we determine whether those voters were citizens of the United States or not? No, we did not. We didn't answer the basic question. We just said they used the wrong registration form. Therefore, we're going to spend millions of dollars to give them a different ballot. And that's the kind of silliness that pervades our system, and unfortunately has created a lot of turned off voters. Let me just talk quickly about something called 2305. That was the bill sponsored by my opponent, which went through the legislature last year. And among other things, it would have made the Libertarian Party almost extinct. It basically raised the signature requirement so high, that Libertarians would never have been able to qualify for state office to be a candidate. I think that's wrong. That's not fair. That's not something that we stand for in this country. But that was the deliberate effort of 2305, sponsored by State Senator Reagan. And she said it was her proudest accomplishment. Well, what happened to that proud accomplishment? As soon as it was filed and signed by the governor, 150,000 of our fellow citizens signed referendum petitions to put it on the ballot. And then instead of fighting for the bill and saying, well, these are things that I think are important, these are reforms that need to happen, they immediately, at the beginning of the current session in 2014, repealed it. So the voters would not have a chance to have their say.
Because they knew voters wouldn't approve, right? They knew voters wouldn't approve of it. That's why
they knew voters wouldn't approve of it. They knew they'd laid an egg, and that it was going to come back and be basically cast down their throat. And so they didn't give us a chance to tell them they were wrong. But independents, every group but hers, were badly, badly treated. Libertarians were put on a path to extinction, as were Greens. Independents, you know, the largest group of voters in the state of Arizona, it made it much harder for them to vote by mail, deliberately purging independents out of the system because they didn't vote in primaries, and most independents don't vote in primaries. And so it was an equal opportunity destroyer, except for her party.
I think the chairman of the Maricopa County Republican Committee said there are too many independents are voting in Republican primaries, and that they don't necessarily share the conservative values that affect the GOP. And in Arizona, conservative values is a mild way to put it, the extreme right wing. But why wouldn't they want independents to vote in their primaries?
Well, they were just fine when independents didn't vote in primaries, and one of the things that I've been talking about in this campaign is that independents get a really raw deal. Independents in primaries, they have a right since 1998 in their Arizona law to vote in either the Republican or Democratic primary, or they can vote in the Libertarian primary if they had one. They just depict their ballot. But they only get a single, under state law, there's only one notice that's sent by the county recorder to independents in Maricopa. It's just a postcard that says, please return this and we'll send you a mail ballot. Tell us which ballot you want. Well, it looks like junk mail, and if you don't put it in, if you don't realize what it is and send it back, the chances are very good that you're not going to vote in that primary. And in 2012, only 7.8% of all the independents registered in Arizona actually voted in the primary. So they didn't make much of an impact, right?
I guess last year, 16% of the 16% of the Republican 550,000 Republican ballots were from independents. 16%, and they're complaining because there's too many independents.
And they're complaining. Yeah, the number went up because there was a very, I worked hard. Some of the county recorders worked very hard, and some independent groups went out and said, you know, independents could make a difference in some of these primaries. Why don't you get involved? And here's how you do it. So they blew past the system as it exists, but it still didn't produce very large numbers, and now the Republicans are saying, well, this is screwing up our little club. We didn't want these other voters to participate. Well, whatever you think about independents, and I think they have a perfect right to take the position that they have, that they don't like either party, I recognize that they are taxpayers in our state. I think we all have to do that, and as such, you can't use public money to have a private election. Either Republican or Democrat, I think it would be wrong to say, well, we want the state of Arizona to pay for our primary, but we don't want anybody else to participate who is also a taxpayer. That is an invitation for a disastrous result in court if somebody, and they will, brings that action. So primaries have to be open to all taxpaying citizens of Arizona, or they need to be paid for by the party that wants to have them exclusive for their particular club.
I think there's a fallacy too that independents are truly independent. My wife is registered as an independent, and she's,
so is mine.
And she's only an independent because she's more liberal than the Democratic Party, and she doesn't want to participate with the party. And I know a whole lot of independents that are very right wing, that are far more right wing than the Republicans. And so, by barring these people from participating in the primaries, they're actually going to alienate some of the greatest supporters.
Well, I think so. And let's just talk about basic fairness. I think that's the most important thing that we need to keep coming back to. And independents are citizens of the United States. They are taxpayers in the state of Arizona. They are fully entitled to make the decision that they've made. And they need to have the same rights as everybody else. And we can't have a special category for those in one party or another and another category for independent voters. Everybody has to be treated the same. And that hasn't been the history. Do you know how many signatures it takes if you're an independent to get to run for statewide office? I don't want to waste time. It's 33,000 signatures. A Republican needs about just under 7,000, and a Democrat needs a few less.
Wow.
That's not a fair system. That's putting your finger on the scale and saying, well, independents don't really get to participate. I deplore that. I think if I'm fortunate enough to be your next Secretary of State, I think everybody's got to have the same playbook, everybody's got to have the same set of rules, and everybody has to be treated equally. Otherwise, we're going to continue to get the decline in participation that we've been seeing over the past dozen years in the state of Arizona. That's an absolutely inevitable consequence of a system that they feel is unfair. And unfortunately, that's exactly what the facts are going to confirm, that the system is unfair.
How much voter fraud is there actually? There's a huge national campaign restricting and making it more complicated for people to vote, you know, in a dozen different states. How much voter fraud has ever been found? I mean, how has it ever affected an election in the last, what, century, quarter century anyway?
Well, we have to define our terms here. Voter election fraud is encloses an awful lot of things. I think many people say, well, it's illegal or non-citizens voting in an election. And I'm not aware of any incidents that has happened. I think, as I said initially, that's the bright line test. And you never relax your vigilance that to make sure that people who are entitled to vote, vote, and people who are not entitled don't vote. But that's the critical distinction. And so I think you need to use whatever investigative power you have to determine citizenship. But you don't want to have a lot of paperwork, a lot of, you know, sort of rigmarole that people have to go through in order to qualify to exercise a absolute critically right of citizenship, voting. So you're right. There have been lots of sort of extra requirements that have been thrown out there that have caused many people not to participate. And I think you've got to be able to prove that any requirement has a direct relationship to the most important thing, and that is determining yes or no, you're a citizen or not. But if we talk about election fraud, dark money is election fraud, in my opinion. Dark money is participating in the political conversation without having the guts to say who you are. It's sitting there in the dark throwing rocks or firing bullets at the combatants, but you want to continue to be a secret. Justice Scalia of the Supreme Court said a very powerful message in one of his opinions not too long ago. Well, it was in 2010, same year as Citizens United. He said he wouldn't want to live in a country where the participants in a political debate were anonymous, where you couldn't tell who it was that was saying yay or nay to a particular issue. And I side with Justice Scalia on that one. I don't always do so, but I think he phrased it very well, and that's the way I feel. I don't think any of us would want to live in a country where secrecy prevailed in the political debate. You want to know who it is you're talking to. You want to make them accountable for their opinions and to make sure that all political views are attributable.
I want to thank you for being with us today, Terry Goddard, and I want to appreciate your role when you were Attorney General in taking on the difficult cases, not taking on what they call the low-hanging fruit, but taking on these complex white-collar crimes, complex sort of group crimes. It's deeply appreciated. You did a great job. You were recognized by your fellow attorney generals. I want to thank you for being with us today. Gary,
well, thank you, and I hope as Secretary of State I can take on a few more.
I hope so, too.
I hope so, too.
Issues
we
like
need
dark money.
Speaking of dark money, I want to do a little plug for our sponsor, the Democrats of the Red Rocks. They have a free movie coming up on September 30th at 6 p.m. at the Sedona Public Library. And as we've been talking about dark money, it's the title of the movie is Citizen Coke. It's about the Koch brothers and their political manipulations with massive amounts of money.
Who's going to be leading the discussion, Gary?
And I will be leading the discussion. As a former ad agency for one of the Koch enterprises. So,
you're turning on your former employer, are you?
Long after they turned on me.
So that's September 30th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Sedona Public Library. This podcast will be available in just a couple of 3 days on our website, www.vvid.org. We thank you all for being with us and hope you will tune in next week when I think we have a really interesting show for everyone to listen to. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye-bye. been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.